There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You are listening to The Grill on Dubai 103.8, your one-stop shop for all your sporting needs every Saturday between the hours of 3 and 6pm. Whether it's keeping you bang up to date with all the live sport across the globe, whether it's looking back on the week that was and picking out some of the highlights and some of the big stories making the headlines, we are here to hopefully entertain you and inform you. If you've got any thoughts that you want to share with us, get them in to us on 4001. I say it all the time, the phone lines are open. I know many of you don't want to spend your hard-earned cash giving us a call, but if you let us know that you want to speak to us, then maybe we'll give you a call back, 04 871 5500, if you want to enter into the conversation. Now then, before we talk footy, and I want to talk an awful lot going on in international football, Mark, I know you've been keeping a close eye on the Copa America, there's the African Cup of Nations, there's the FIFA Women's World Cup. I want to just go around the houses, get some live sport. F1 started now, in actual fact, qualifying for the French Grand Prix. I will keep an eye on that. Mark Archer has just seen India's innings come to a close. Afghanistan have got a chance.
Yeah, give them a puncher's chance here. They've restricted India to a score of 224 for 8. So India will be disappointed. That top scorer was the captain, Virat Kohli, with 67. And get this, Afghanistan bowlers all took wickets. So fantastic for them. Wow. They bowled really straight. The wicket was holding, it was turning a bit. They opened with a spin bowler. But that's a very gettable score. And if Afghanistan can manage to bat 50 overs, you think they'll probably win the match. So India might have to bowl Afghanistan out to win it. Afghanistan, can they bat 50 overs? Can they keep their heads? Can they give a really good chase to the score? They need 225 to win to defeat India. And that would be a massive upset in this Cricket World Cup, and a great result for Afghanistan. That's a fairy tale story if there ever is one in sport, yeah, over the last few years. But yeah, Afghanistan, they will need 225 to defeat India at Southampton. The other match is also underway. It was a terrible start by New Zealand. Two wickets they lost in the first over, including first ball Martin Guptill. Colin Munro went the last ball of the over, 25 for 2 after 7 overs. It's also looking like a bowler's pitch at Old Trafford, and New Zealand are grinding their way at the moment, 25 for 2. Kane Williamson, 14 not out. They're very experienced, Ross Taylor, 11 not out, and New Zealand have plenty of work to do there in that match.
Do India win for you, Monty? They'll still win this, surely?
No, I wouldn't say they would surely win it now, because I think Chahal and Kuldeep Yadav, they would have to spin a web around Afghanistan. And Afghanistan have a very good attacking opening batsman, Hazratullah Zazai. If he gives Afghanistan a fantastic start, then India are in big trouble.
Watch this space. Oh, I'm giddy with excitement at the thought of a major shock in this ICC Cricket World Cup. Keep an eye on tennis as well. Mark Lomas is with us. He's doing just that. David Goffin already into the final. Queens were up and running at Queens as well, right?
Queens are up and running. Dmitry Medvedev 6-5 up against Gilles Simon in the first set there. Afterwards, we're going to have Felix Auger Aliassime against Feliciano Lopez, the 2017 champion, and Andy Murray's doubles partner. Yeah. They may have to play 3 successive matches this afternoon over in West London. But yeah, Felix Auger Aliassime is really, this tournament, he has really sprung to life. You know, one of the hottest prospects on the ATP Tour, and some big scalps in this tournament as well. But yeah, he is one to watch. The youngest ever ATP Tour finalist earlier this year, and he's reached 3 finals this year.
He is
one to watch.
Absolutely.
Some great matches. Beat Kyrgios, beat Tsitsipas, as you said, and now hoping to add another scalp to that in terms of Feliciano Lopez.
We talked about Jesse Lingard a little earlier, and we widened that conversation out. Just sticking with tennis, the man who, we've talked about him an awful lot over the course of Dubai Eye, whether it's off-screen, whether it's grill. We do love to hate Nick Kyrgios. He's been up to his usual histrionics again. Is it getting tiresome? Has it been tiresome? Well, it's been tiresome for a long time now, but where's Nick at?
I mean, I find it entertaining, I have to say. Like, in terms of, I think as long as he's not being rude, it's when he's being rude to people. But I do find it quite entertaining, you know, when he's talking to himself, telling himself, why were you playing FIFA until 3 a.m. in the morning after losing a point, you know, and he's playing shots through his legs, which admittedly, yes, it can be a bit seen as a bit insulting to the player he's playing against. It's magic to watch as a spectator, though, when he pulls it off. And he did that a few times this week at Queens. Obviously, we're always questioning his headspace and whether he's in the right place, but grass is really a surface that he should be shining on. And I always think he's an outside bet. He's always an outside bet for Wimbledon. If his head is in the right place, it just so rarely is.
He's just the sort of player, though, you wish would fulfill his talent more and play more consistently. Because, you know, on grass, against any player in the world, if he finds his A game, he is the one player that players want to avoid in an early round, and can really has the, he has the all-around game on grass to really do some damage to the big players. But just you never know where his head is. You never know what he was doing the night before. Was he playing FIFA? Was he causing problems? And you just wish he'd live up to his talent. Because for me, he's a waste of talent.
Oh, right.
Absolutely.
Now he is.
Absolutely. It's just, I mean, as someone who works in the media, it's just, he is a gift, you know. He's a gift that keeps on giving. You know, all earlier this week as well, criticising Djokovic, saying, if he can't beat me, you're not the greatest of all time. I feel like he has a sick obsession with wanting to be liked. He wants to be like Roger Federer. You know, comments like this, it gives us something to get our teeth into.
I actually think he's got a point when it comes to Novak Djokovic, in actual fact. But it's the, for me, and listen, there's loads of different views, and I know one or two listeners of this show are huge fans of Nick Kyrgios, whether he's right or wrong in some of the things that he does. The biggest issue I've got is his tanking, because that is disrespectful, not to the opponents, disrespectful to we, the paying public. That, for me, is the issue. Now, Robbie Greenfield, who is a big fan of Nick Kyrgios, would always point out that if you look at the ticket sales, regardless of whether he tanks or not, his matches tend to always be sold out. So fans are still going there because it's that unpredictability. You don't know if you're getting Nick Kyrgios, the enigmatic Nick Kyrgios, who can blow Rafa Nadal off the court, as he's shown, Novak off the court, or the Nick Kyrgios that's going to have a tantrum and storm off.
But I think it's great, and I agree with Robbie, and I've heard him talk about Nick before as well, that he has personality, and I like sportsmen and athletes who have a level of personality. What you said there is exactly the same as Gael Monfils. I've watched Monfils play a couple of times where he's just given up in matches, but then you watch him other moments and he's just absolutely spectacular to watch as a spectator, you know, supremely talented player. But you're right, you know, particularly if you pay the money to go, you want to see them play well. When they give up and they just stop playing, that's disappointing as a fan.
Of course, Nick Kyrgios does have well-documented issues. He really is missing a mentor. It feels to me, now, whether he wants this or not, and I don't want to pity the man, but it just seems to me he just needs a real figurehead in his life to just kind of point out the error of ways. There'll be those out there that point out, well, he's got to decide for himself that he doesn't want to do this. You can point out, listen, you can't do this, you can't do that. If he doesn't want to change himself, then unfortunately, I've got a feeling Nick Kyrgios, come the end of his career, whenever he does hang up his racket, he's going to look back on his career with regrets. And I know John McEnroe said so today as well. He's saying, listen, for all the talent, because there's no doubt when you look at the talent and the aggression, I mean, he's a Grand Slam winner. He's got the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to hark back to, you know, some looking at the highlights reel of some of his shots at Queens, particularly this week, winning points through his legs, at least three of them. You know, he has it. He has the talent. But yeah, at the moment, that talent is massively, massively unfulfilled. He does need an arm around the shoulder, whoever that is, one of the old guard, maybe Philippoussis, Rafter, you know, someone to come in and really head him in the right direction. But yeah, it's not there at the moment.
Roger Federer at the other end of the spectrum, of course. He is, 38 in August? Another semi-final, as Mark said a little earlier, bidding for a 10th title over in Halle, Germany, his traditional warm-up tournament before Wimbledon, SW19. In terms of Wimbledon this year, Robbie and I were speaking about this in the office the other day. Is it very much in terms of the men, Novak, in terms of the women? Well, just, I guess, toss a coin, because there are so many wonderful ladies right now. I know Naomi Osaka still having her problems. She was beaten in the early rounds over in the UK. I think that was that Birmingham she was beaten early rounds on that one. But in terms of who we're expecting to come to the fore at SW19, men and women?
Definitely for me. And I think also it's interesting to see Ash Barty as well carrying on the form from the French Open. Yeah. And we're seeing, you know, she's got to the final of Birmingham again this week, may win another title. So, you know, definitely the form player, I think, going to the women's draw. Obviously, the Williams sisters on grass, always going to be there or thereabouts. Over in the men's draw, yes, for me, Djokovic is the overwhelming favourite, I think, for this tournament. Interesting that he's not playing any warm-ups. He hasn't played any warm-ups yet. Neither has Rafa.
I think Novak's planning a week. I think next week, isn't he?
Yeah, next week.
Eastbourne, I think.
Yeah, I think he is playing at Eastbourne. But yeah, Nadal, I don't think Nadal is going to play any warm-up matches, apart from a couple of exhibitions. So, you know, I think Djokovic is the man there. Obviously, Federer, you know, I love Roger. I would love to see him win Wimbledon again.
But
I do think that Djokovic at Wimbledon, he is the man to beat this year. It'd be interesting to see if the likes of Raonic, Cilic, you know, Zverev step up to the plate. But yeah, I think on the men's side there could be some interesting players coming through.
Have they announced the seedings for Wimbledon, which is always important to see who gets who in a quarterfinal or a semi-final? I agree with it'd be great for Wimbledon. I also, obviously, it's hard to go past Djokovic. We all want Roger to do well. It'd be nice for one of these young guns, whether it be Tsitsipas or one of the younger guys, to really make an impact now and maybe make a semi-final or final. The women's side of draw is so tough to pick. I'd love to see where the fitness of Petra Kvitova is, because I know that if she's
two-time
fit,
winner.
And she's a lefty and she's difficult, and she's a big strong physical player with a big serve. If she's fit, it takes a good player to get past her at Wimbledon as well. But she's had some fitness issues this year.
For me, best serve in the female on the female side, that big lefty Petra, when she is fit and on song, especially on grass, she's won there twice before. You're absolutely right; she'll take some stopping.
I think also it'll be interesting the doubles side of the draw. There's a lot of attention on that this year, of course, because Andy Murray's playing still on the hunt for a mixed doubles partner. He's been rejected several times people. Yeah. So Ash Barty was the first person he asked, and she said no because she wants to focus on the singles. We had Billie Jean King saying that she'd come out of retirement to play with him. Maria Sharapova, no, he's still on the hunt. He wants to play mixed doubles and doubles, but it's hard because particularly if you're getting players who are playing a singles draw and the doubles,
absolutely,
do you want to play in a third one as well, even if it's with Murray, which is, you know, is going to give you a chance, I think, because he's looked pretty sharp actually at Queens this week.
And Murray's, just correct me if I'm wrong, he's not playing the singles.
No, he's not in the singles. No, just in the doubles.
Has he given an indication of a time frame when he might play singles again?
I think end of the year, I think, is where he's looking at. I think what he's targeting, and again, I've not sat with Andy, but from what I'm led to believe, he's looking to be back singles by the end of the year, and then come the start of 2020, heading into the Australian Open, he wants hopefully to be in rude health and then give it a go again.
But he's picked a very strong partner for Wimbledon, you know, in Pierre Hubert, who is a double specialist. He's won all four of the Grand Slams. He won Wimbledon in 2016 with Nicolas Mahut, the same year that Andy Murray won Wimbledon. So, you know, he has the experience. And as I said, I think, you know, when you've got a world-class singles player in there, even when he's on the recovery, I think whoever Murray plays with, they will have a chance in the doubles, either normal doubles or mixed.
Yeah, Wimbledon begins a week on Monday. Looking forward to it. The peaches and cream will be out over there at SW19.
Strawberries and cream.
Peaches, strawberries. Yeah, it's strawberries and cream. You're absolutely right. Peaches and cream are what I'm probably having for dessert.
That's Augusta. That's Augusta for the golf.
Oh, it is. I'm all
peach,
over the shop.
Peach Melbourne, brilliant in Georgia.
Have you done Augusta?
Twice.
Of course you have. Mark Archer, there's not a sporting event he's not been to with all his connections. Right then, an innings break between India and Afghanistan. Keep it locked right here, Dubai 103.8. Of course it's strawberries and cream at SW19. A week on Monday, Wimbledon. It is, for me, one of the best sporting events. Forget just the tennis sporting events. Wimbledon, it will be resplendent, so it will. Cannot wait for that. We will build up towards it over the course of the next week. When we come back, plenty more chat. We'll get to the football as well. We're going to be joined by a very special guest. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill.
Join the conversation.
Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
Yeah, the game is always on. We are down here at Kickers. We are here for the next 40 minutes or so. You're listening to The Grill. Myself, Chris McCarty, joined by an eclectic little mix of pundits today. We've got Mark Arch, we've got Mark Lomas, we've got the armchair fan as well, Monty. And a big thanks as well to Kasim Ali. A big well done to Kunal. He is the recipient of that all-expenses-paid trip to the ICC Cricket World Cup on us as well. And a big thanks once again to Emirates Airlines. We're joined by another guest now for the final 40 minutes or so. Delighted to be joined by a good friend, a man who you have heard of before. And in actual fact, come to think of it, he was actually part of our World Cup coverage down at Bridgewater Tavern last summer. His name is Bojan Djulovic. He is the academy manager of ESM Football. Bojan, great to have you with us. Good afternoon, my man.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the invitation.
It was. You popped on down, did you not? The World Cup.
Popped down to
Bridgewater.
You know, comment a little bit of World Cup.
That's what it was, my man. It seems so long ago now.
Yeah, it is. It is. It was late. Last summer. Last summer,
it's been a year, my man. We'll get to what you're up to, and I know a lot of good things happening with ESM in just a moment. I asked Kasim, who we had in, head of cricket development for the ICC Academy, about how he goes about supplementing, you know, his clients, if you can call them that, during the summer. It's all about getting indoor. How do you ensure that your kids, who play football, of course, the beautiful game, how do you ensure that they keep kind of things ticking over in the summer months? Are you indoors? I mean, do you have programs going?
Basically, term three of our program is indoors. So starting end of April up till October, maybe, we're indoors still. So we're offering summer camps and stuff like that just to keep them going until we start with the season,
Keep the kids ticking over, right?
Yeah.
How is the scene out here from a grassroots, from a I guess, a developmental standpoint for football. We see so many sports. You're all competing, I would imagine, for the same thing, and that's to get children in, look after children, develop them in their chosen sport. How is it? Is it in rude health, football, in this part of the world?
To be honest, there's loads of academies out there right now, more than 70 academies.
In Dubai alone?
Yeah, which is a great number. And we're trying to keep up with everyone, and as a part of GEMS, we have doors open to all of them schools, and they trust us to you know, work with the kids from grassroots to youth football.
You've worked, I know, back home. You're obviously a proud Serbian. You've worked, you've seen football from other places. You've seen and you're able to compare and contrast it with Dubai. The talent set, the skill set, is it all here? Is there the talent here for the UAE to be successful in future years?
There is talent in UAE, but generally, I think they should start working with the youth program first, rather than bringing big names to be a coach, a manager of a senior team. You know, they have to start from grassroots up to seniors, so they can make a big plan in the next 10 years, let's say, to get on the top in GCC, which
should be the plan.
Yeah.
How much interaction is there between the academies, kind of the independent academies, and the Arabian Gulf League clubs are here? Is there any interaction with the
Yeah, club? there was a bigger interaction, I think, a year or two ago, where we played pro leagues with the pro clubs. Now we have leagues in Sport City, and where professional clubs take part with the younger players as well. So I think in the future it must be a better structure.
Yeah, give us a bit of insight, Bojan, if you can, because I've always wondered this. It does seem, and again, anyone who's been listening to this show since 3 p.m. will know that we talked a little bit about cricket and where its development needs to go. One of the things, whenever I speak to coaches, to parents, to kids, we've had a number of talented kids on this show who have gone on to do wonderful things. The biggest thing that I cannot quite work out is there are so many different institutions. Now, hear me out here. There's the school, there's the academies, there are pro teams. Okay, and then there's select squads that kind of operate independently of all of that as well. If I'm a parent and I send my kid to a school, what advice should you be giving me? Are they allowed to play for the school? Is it only the academy? If they play at an academy, can they play for a pro club? How does it all work, Bojan?
First of all, it depends what you want as a parent.
Fair.
When you send your kid to the academy.
Fair.
Is it to be active or to manage to go in the pro clubs or to have fun? I mean, it depends on the parent what they want. But now we have a structured program where we can go into GEM schools and schools in general and see their squads playing, so we can choose the best players to take part in our academy and our elite squads. So,
and do your academies, are you in competition? Is your academy in direct competition with a pro league's academy? So are you in direct competition with Al Nassr? Are Al Nassr sending scouts out there and you're sending scouts out there? Or is there a relationship that exists there where young players can play in your academy and know that there is a pathway into professional football?
The pro clubs just open up that window for the kids from the academies, because before they were open only for local kids. So now, with this residency, I think it's 5 years or
yeah.
So kids can go in the pro clubs and train with them and compete with them. But our kids, we've been approached a couple of times from the pro clubs and stuff, so that shows that we're doing something right.
Absolutely. Now tell me this, and I want you to be very honest as well. When kids are coming in, whatever age, whether it's the mini kickers, who I think four and upwards, and then up the age groups, are the kids here talking about the Arabian Gulf League? Are the kids here talking about Shabab Al Ahlis? Are the kids talking about Al Ain's? Or is it, and I think I know the answer to all of this, is it still your Messi's, Ronaldo's, your Barcelona's, your Juventus's?
I'll be that honest with you. I don't think they know about AFC, which is wrong for me.
I mean,
they live here, and that's the biggest stage of football in UAE, and they should have known. But apart from Ronaldo, Messi, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and top clubs, that's the only thing that they're interested in.
What do you think could be done to kind of improve that relationship and improve that awareness of of what's going on in the Arabian Golf League.
Yeah, definitely better marketing to schools and you know, to the to early stages, so they can see what's happening on a football stage in UAE in general.
And I think more synergy with academies like yourself. There should be a two-way open dialogue. I've firmly been a believer, and again, I appreciate many different people have many different opinions in all of this. The academies, for me, are should be tier two. You should all be answering to a higher power authority.
They should feed the clubs.
Exactly that. Exactly that, and the fact that it isn't happening, and I appreciate everyone's trying to earn a living, and I know a one like the fact that you guys are doing, it's not just you, there's the Dale Gordons, the Chris Browns of this world, Freddie Canute and Russell and all his team at Capital Academy, that's just to name a few, there's Teddy Caden, there's so many coaches doing their very best. I always just think it's a little self-serving though, we need to have a greater structure so that we can clearly see, so that parents, if they are living here, because you know Dubai is transient by nature, but more and more and more people now are putting roots down here for many a year, and I just feel that those pathways with which you can clearly see mini kickers into ESM Football Academy, into a Shabab Al Ahly, into the first team, and then who knows from
there. I agree 100%, but it should be a both way street. So from our side, in our mindset, we have that idea, and we'll try to organize meetings with UAEFA, you know, president and stuff like that, so we can give them an idea what we can do, if we can.
And if you want them to have more knowledge of the AGL, then you should direct them towards Chris McCarty's social media page.
Indeed.
Because he's been doing his utmost to improve the English language coverage.
He's doing an amazing job there.
I am trying my heart out, and we will have more on next season as well. We're going to be doing more.
It's good to see that, you know, I've been to some of these Globe Soccer Awards in Dubai. I've seen a lot of kids from the clubs, the academy kids. They take them there, you know, show them the gala event. And you can see the passion in the kids, actually. You
absolutely.
Know, when they see Ronaldo on the stage. So obviously, yes, we need more exposure in the region. You know, kids to be taken to such just major events, show them the importance of sports, etc. And I do see a lot of kids wearing their club jersey. I live in Merdif, so I see a lot of local kids wearing the Al Ain jersey,
brilliant.
The Al Wasl jersey. So I see them a lot, you know. So it shows that there is an interest, but obviously everyone's focusing on Messi and Ronaldo.
And then
I can't blame them.
And Bojan's quick
or Neymar,
that PSG shirt that Monty is sporting right now. But listen, football, I appreciate it's a global game, and these are some of the headaches that the power of the B have got, because young kids, with the way football is consumed, with the way that it's accessible, fortunately Messi's and Ronaldo's are there to be consumed. It's about how we grow that fan base, and more than that, it's those pathways. Because speaking of pathways, a lot of focus in the last 12, 18 months, my inbox is full from academies, not just in football, from cricket, from rugby, all talking about, for some strange reason, US scholarships. You want to offer these pathways to academically, I guess, gifted kids who perhaps use sport as a vehicle with which to further themselves later in life.
Yeah, definitely. We have USU as a part of our program as well as a partner in taking and providing and giving opportunity to kids to go to US and get a scholarship, sports scholarship.
It's brilliant now. It's like, because for some kids who perhaps don't have aspirations about becoming a full-time sportsman or woman, it's an opportunity, though, with the skill set they have to go on and further their career at Ivy League schools in the US.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And you witnessed yesterday, it was a great day for our Academy end of season awards, and you know, due to huge demand, we had to split the program in 2 hours. So
how important is that? How important at the end of a long, hard season is it to recognize achievements?
For us, it's really important, because from all of our programs, we have squads as a top of the pyramid. So we just want to expose kids and parents when they come on the end of season awards night to, you know, to see and to be motivated to work even harder to get there on the stage with you, man.
Thanks.
I'll never forget my most improved player award for Lim Rovers in 2002.
Oh,
so
most
still,
improved.
Still there.
It's on the
wall.
That's the year you took that quantum leap, and then the year after it was like, no, I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm
I went from right back to centre midfield, and then they put me back to right back. So.
Oh, I love it. But listen, Bojan, you're going to stick around. I want to talk when we come back about the elite boys. We're going to talk your Messi's because he's in a bit of trouble. Argentina are in a world of pain in the Copa America. As for Mo Salah, well, it was a serene start for Egypt, somewhat in the African Cup of Nations. We'll talk all of that, and there's the FIFA Women's World Cup to discuss as well. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
The game is always on. 15-plus screens dotted throughout the venue. Kickers Sports Bar down at Dubai Sports City. Great little location down here. Wonderful food and beverage down here as well. So if you are at a loose end, if you are looking for a venue to watch all your sporting needs, then do pop on down. Formula One ongoing. French Grand Prix, I think this is race number 10 of the season. I'll keep you up to date with that. We've got the cricket as well. We're talking all things football for now because I'm conscious it's not often when I'm on this show we don't speak football for 2.5 hours.
2 hours, 35 minutes. And this is remarkable.
We've not spoken football. It's bonkers. Copa America ongoing. Brazil, of course, hosts. They have been coming in for dogs abuse by their own supporters. Argentina on the cusp of potentially going out. Seen much of it? I know it's been kicking off late into the night. You've got to stay up well past your bedtime to watch Copa America.
No, not for me, Chris. No. It's far too late for me.
Late.
I've been watching the highlights and obviously keeping tabs with it. One kind of big storyline that I've noticed is about the poor attendances there. You know, in a football mad nation like Brazil, you expect stadiums to be packed time and time again, even if it's not for Brazil. Really low attendances, although CONMEBOL have been talking about how, you know, the attendance is up on last time 4 years ago, 29,000 average, but this is Brazil.
Yeah.
29,000
Paraguay,
average.
Qatar was, you know, unbelievable.
Dead. Yeah, it was almost empty.
And empty stadium.
Part of the problem is that the tickets are being priced too high. You know, they're too high for local people and Brazilians.
And with the social and economic problems that Brazil is encountering.
$50 a ticket.
Is that what it is?
You know, $50 to $152 a ticket. You know, and that's why we're seeing poor attendances around 12,000-13,000. The opening match, I think, was upwards of 70. But, you know, one of the games was at the Maracanã, and it was at 19,000 or 20,000 capacity at the Maracanã. It must have been entirely empty.
It's crazy. It's crazy. In Argentina, are in all sorts of problems. I know Bojan, good friend of yours, Mr. Maradona, he will, I'm sure, be watching on. I guess aghast at what we're witnessing, and that is most Argentina fans. Lionel Scaloni, never the right man for me, never ever in a million months of Sundays was he the right man for that job. And once again, an overemphasis on the little magician Lionel Messi.
Yeah, I know. Media and people in general, they don't support national team now as much as they support before because of their poor manager selection lately. Before we all witnessed the World Cup, what happened there, you know, they have cliques in the team, they have, you know, people are good with the manager, people are not good with manager, you know, everything affects a pitch and their performance.
Yeah, there's no doubt there are cliques in that dressing room. Some suggestion that there's the golden generation with Messi insisting upon that Aguero be in the squad. Scaloni wanted to go with Cardi. He's good mates with Di Maria as well, Messi. And then they've got the younger guard coming through. There's no doubt there are issues in the Argentina camp. They need to beat Qatar in their final group game in order to qualify. Monty, I know you've been watching it. Will they do that? You feel that they will just stumble into the knockout stages?
It's not going to be an easy game the way Argentina are playing. I think Qatar will give them a tough game. They are Asian champions for no reason. They beat Japan, and Japan is not a bad team. And I think Argentina will win that game, but then they'll have to be careful. The first half, I feel, of that game is going to be quite cagey. And then I hope we see Messi magic come along.
I guess the other story that I've been enjoying is Carlos Queiroz, now is boss of Colombia. And lo and behold, Carlos Queiroz goes in at Colombia. What do they do? Stop conceding goals. Because that he's the master at it. I think he took Iran to the World Cup when they qualified, when they conceded just one goal. He's the man that oversaw Manchester United's record run of 13 games in the 2008-09 season without conceding a goal. I mean, the man, when it comes to setting up a team not to concede, he's the absolute master.
Absolutely. I actually follow quite a few Iranian football journalists on Twitter, and you know, they were so gutted when Queiroz left because he did such a fantastic job of steadying the ship, you know, working with a very difficult, notoriously difficult football association there. Stayed there for years, really raised the level of the national team, took them to the World Cup. They were gutted that he left, but he's already putting his mark on this Colombia team, and for me, I think Colombia are favourites above Brazil actually for the tournament because of how well they played in those opening couple of games, how tight they are at the back. That's what you need in tournament football.
That's exactly.
I think for me, if I had to pin my colours to the mast, I'd say Colombia as champions this time.
Colombia versus Uruguay, my finalist.
Is that what you're going for in the final?
Same here.
So Brazil on home soil, don't make the final.
Yeah.
Tete will go, you'll go if that's the case. And I know they were booed off against Venezuela. They struggled, did Brazil. They ended up drawing 0-0. Struggling with all those attacking players. I know Neymar's not there, but my goodness, the problems again. If Argentina have got issues, maybe not as deep for Brazil, but issues nonetheless.
But you look at the starting lineup for Brazil and think really that they should be champions looking at it. You know, they've got Firmino up front, Neres, Coutinho, Richarlison, Fernandinho, Casemiro, Marquinhos, Alves. You know, they've got great players in that team, and I think on paper they should be the ones sort of really walking through the tournament. But just something missing there. And
yeah.
I don't know if also, you know, what's going on with the fans, perhaps not supporting them as much. That's a big thing, I think, for Brazil as well.
I think over the last few decades, Brazil are so used to seeing the likes of Rivaldo, Ronaldinho, Romario. I'm not too sure if Neymar is a fantastic player if he cuts off all his outside of football activities, and he focuses on football. But I think Brazil is missing those kind of players, Ronaldinho's and Romario's, Rivaldo's. And that's why maybe even the fan attendances are a bit poor.
Yeah, there's
suggesting that Firmino is not as good as Ronaldo.
But there's something a rather mechanical about this Brazil team. Yeah. I said it at the World Cup as well. It is not as free flowing as perhaps it has been. But then again, when you're able to call upon Ronaldinho and Ronaldo and Rivaldo, it's far easier to play a little bit better and a little bit more expansive in that regard. We'll keep an eye on it, though.
He played with two holding midfielders in the first game.
That's,
you know, and that's like, you know, Fernandinho and Casemiro both playing in that first game. Thinking, come on, first game of the Copa America, let
open
the leash
up
off a little bit.
A little bit.
I think in general now, Latin American footballers, and you know, as a football advanced and you have a lot of overpaid players, there's so much ego in the dressing room. It's not like when Ronaldo played and Ronaldinho and Rivaldo. Now they're earning crazy money, like 15 million per season and stuff, so it's so hard to put them in one team and so they get performed.
And I think the other thing, I think there is truth to that as well, that Europe and the rest of the world has caught up. I think always South America was the standard bearer because they were seen as exotic players. Now all South American players, mainly, majority, are playing their football in Europe, and there has no doubt there's been a closing of the gap there. So Copa America continues. Colombia for Mark. Colombia, Uruguay. You're going Uruguay to win it, Monty. Interesting, and Bojan's tipped that for the final as well.
And
here's
one for Chris: Alexis Sanchez.
Yes,
scoring for Chile, but not for Manchester United.
I don't think he's done. He's done, that man. He is. He's gone the Fernando Torres route when he joined Chelsea. He's lost a yard of pace, and he looks done. So he does. That's the Copa America. Africa Cup of Nations has kicked off as well. A little closer to home, of course. Majority of eyes. This part of the world will be on Mo Salah, superstar for Liverpool over the past couple of seasons. He is the talisman, he is the poster boy of Egyptian football. Michel Salgado, resident here of Dubai, he's assistant to Javier Aguirre as well over there. Egypt, favourites?
For me, I will go with Nigeria this time. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. A little left field with Nigeria. Egypt, fancy though?
For me, I think Egypt are the team to beat. They've won the African Cup of Nations twice previously on home soil. They haven't failed to win it on home soil. So 2006, the last time it was there, they won. Obviously, champions of 2010. It's been a little bit of a while, but I just think with those, again, you know, when you come across Egyptian football fans anywhere in the world, incredibly passionate. There were 75,000 people packed the stadium in Cairo yesterday.
Brilliant.
To watch them beat Zimbabwe 1-0 in the opening game. I think when you've got that level of support behind you, because the Egyptian league still has problems with crowd trouble, teams continue to play behind closed doors, the opportunity to come and watch the national team, I think you will find that passionate crowd getting behind them.
But loads of pressure as well for a football.
Of course, a lot of pressure. But you know, they weren't
great against Zimbabwe, were they?
They weren't great, but it's the opening match of the tournament, and they won 1-0. So I think that's all you can ask for, really, is to get the win on the board. Beyond them, I personally think Morocco, outside bets. Herve Renard, absolute genius at AFCON. You know, I watched
brilliant
Zambia beat Ivory Coast on penalties in 2012. One of the greatest sporting moments I think I've watched. You know, it's such an unlikely underdog story that he masterminded there. He went from doing that to then taking an underachieving Ivory Coast team
that had never won the African Cup of Nations and then won the African Cup of Nations with
them.
He
knows how to get it done.
And at the World Cup, I think Morocco were unlucky. You know, they were a bit unlucky last year. Tough group, but the team is good. And I think Renard, he knows how to take a team through that tournament. Morocco haven't won it in 42 years. Massive underachievers in African football. I think, you know, playing in North Africa as well, I think Morocco could be there or thereabouts. That would be my outside
also,
bet.
Also, I think this African Cup of Nations has 24 teams. They've gone the European way.
They've gone the expanded route.
Yeah, the expanded route. Yeah, and I mean, I think even goals. We might not see many goals this African Cup of Nations, given that it's played now in June, July, where it's extremely hot, whereas it used to be played before in
January.
Yeah. So the goals might be goal ratio might be a bit less, and I think Egypt, along with Ivory Coast.
Ivory Coast, Monty's going with.
One thing I always love about the African Cup of Nations is that generally, I think it's quite an unpredictable tournament, and although, you know, we see some of the same names, the likes of Cameroon, Ivory Coast, Egypt, around the final, usually there's a bit of a dark horse that gets through to the semi-final. We've seen Burkina Faso, Equatorial Guinea, Zambia, of course, going all the way to win it. You know, they've got into the semi-finals before. There's three debutants this time, really looking forward to Madagascar. I interviewed the captain of Madagascar actually last year about qualifying for the African Nations Cup for the first time. An incredible thing for
a tiny country.
Mauritania, Burundi, you know, there's some great stories here. And again, as I always say, the 2014 format, I love it because it gives those smaller nations who don't usually get a chance to play at AFCON a chance to shine. And for these players as well, I have to say, like some of these players from some of these smaller countries, it is a game-changing thing if they get picked up at the African Nations Cup. If scouts are there, it is life-changing for these people.
It absolutely is. 24-nation African Cup of Nations then. A fan of that. A 48-nation World Cup Finals. A fan of that?
No. I'm not averse to it, honestly. I'm not averse to it. I think, you know, again, like giving some of those smaller... You see the likes of, you know, Panama getting to the World Cup. You see Iceland getting to the World Cup. I know they've done that in a 32-team format. Stretching that out to more teams, I think it just can develop football so much in those countries and be a really, you know, a catalyst for change and improvement. I understand the criticisms of it, of course I do, but I'm not averse to it. I'd be interested to see if it works.
For a Scotland fan, I should be a fan of it, but I just think World Cup 32 is enough. You know, you
32
want
is a good number. Yeah. I think 32 is a good number.
48, just, let's be frank, 48 is just to ensure India and China get there eventually.
Yeah, I think money effect, you know, stop us to accept that idea of 48 clubs, because you see Platini was arrested.
Yeah,
you know,
he denied. Of course, he has denied wrongdoing.
Yeah, of course. But they gave Qatar to organize World Cup during summer, which is for
madness.
Me madness. Really, I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knows in actual fact how it's going to work. So African Cup of Nations ongoing. You're absolutely right, Monty, to point out it is in the summer months as well. So much going on. And if all of that wasn't enough, I tell you what, I've watched an awful lot of this FIFA Women's World Cup. Quality, standard, some of the goals, my goodness. Scotland are gone. Don't want to labour on that point. They were 3-0 up against Argentina. Only time we've been 3-0 up against Argentina, and we drew 3-3. We are gone. A lot of controversy around this FIFA Women's World Cup, though. Why? Well, because of goalkeepers stepping off of their line at penalties. It's madness, is it not?
It is. I mean, I have to say, despite being an Englishman, my heart really, really broke for Scotland in that match. You know, 3-0 up, Argentina getting back into it, and then a very controversial decision. Oh. The goalkeeper saving the penalty, but then being deemed by VAR to have taken what I can only think is like millimetres of a step off the line. You know, we've seen penalties taken over the years. Some goalkeepers are absolute experts at making sure they get off that line.
Yeah.
I understand why the rule has been introduced.
It's harsh. To be honest,
but that was heartbreaking. I think for the, you know, especially after it came after the goalkeeper had produced a fantastic save as well.
I think I referenced it on Thursday night's off script. Do any of you remember I think it was 2003 Champions League final, AC Milan Juventus. Dida was essentially on the 6-yard line at penalties. And then we've got an instance where it's literally millimetres. Now, those of you listening might say, listen, rules are rules. Whether you're millimetres offside or you're a mile offside, offside is offside. I appreciate all of that. But it's a new rule that's been added. It's getting new rules for the sake of adding rules. There are far more issues that FIFA, UEFA and all the powers that be, getting VAR to just work so that people in the stadiums can understand what's going on is numero uno. It just seems that they're creating these rules that
are just lunacy. I'll be honest with you. Only rule I can see it works is goal line technology. For me, even VAR is just...
Everything else out.
Yeah.
I think a big problem as well in the Scotland game was the fact that the way that VAR was used a couple of times, both to look at the penalty decision, then to have the penalty retaken, there was a real issue with the referee, because the referee, she did not add on enough stoppage time to take... It took almost 5 minutes, basically, to decide to award the penalty. Such a stoppage in play in the game. That is... where VAR is understandably going to be criticised, to have that much of a stoppage and then for it not to be added
on. It's NFL. Stop, start.
Then it goes back to a referee again and his decision. We might see it as a penalty and he'll be like, nah.
Yeah, you're exactly that. It comes down to opinions. You're absolutely right.
I'm so glad that the Premier League is not going to be introducing this VAR technology next season.
They're adding the VAR technology.
Yeah, but not the goal.
The penalty issue. They're adding VAR. VAR will be in the Premier League next season, but they're not taking this rule about the goalkeeper must have at least 1 foot on the goal line. Just want to run through very quickly before we're into our final segment the fixtures this evening. Copa America Group A, Bolivia taking on Venezuela, and it's Peru against Brazil. Both of those matches kicking off at 11 p.m. From an African Cup of Nations standpoint, it's Congo taking on Uganda, that one kicking off in about 40 minutes time, and then 9 p.m. this evening it's Boyan's Nigeria, they're going up against Burundi. And then from a Women's World Cup perspective, you've got Germany taking on Nigeria, that one kicking off at 7:30, and 11 p.m. this evening, Norway, always punched well above their weight when it comes to women's football, they're taking on the Australians, who have performed brilliantly.
I think there's a lot of fantastic ties actually in the last 16, but I think Australia and Norway is one of the ones that kind of stands out for me. Norway, of course, champions back in 1999, facing an Australia team kind of picked by many to be outsiders for the tournament. Sam Kerr, the obvious outstanding talent. She scored 4 goals in one game already at this tournament, so she has stamped her mark on this tournament already. I think it'll be interesting to see. I think Australia might get the better of Norway there. The first game, by the way, Germany-Nigeria. Yeah. Germany have yet to concede a goal at the tournament. They've looked very good. Nigeria, only the second time they've made the quarters. They've played in every Women's World Cup. I think that one's going Germany's way.
Yeah, I think so as
France,
well. Steve.
France versus Brazil as well. That's a
France,
good game to look.
France, Brazil,
Marta,
absolutely.
Marta, what a remarkable story this World Cup. 17 goals. She's overtaken as the leading top scorer in the men's and women's game. Fantastic story
17
there.
17 goals for the six-time Ballon d'Or winner, Marta, the Brazilian. When we come back, we're wrapping up. Keep it locked right here to Dubai 103.8.
This is The Grill.
Join the conversation.
Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
Yeah, welcome back to the show, into the final 5 minutes or so. A big thanks to each and every one of you for tuning in, as always, on your Saturday afternoon. Fingers crossed you have learned something over the course of the past 3 hours. We'll be keeping you bang up to date as well with all the live sport. Let's do that now, if we may, before we go anywhere else. Let's give you a quick update on the cricket. 2 matches this Saturday afternoon, Mark Archer.
Yeah, India have batted first in their match against Afghanistan. 224 for 8, they've been restricted. Afghanistan, a slow and steady start, 13 without loss after 4.3 of their overs. So Afghanistan require 225 for what would be a massive upset victory, and they're making slow and steady progress here. Key for them is keeping wickets in hand. And the other match at Old Trafford, New Zealand had a disastrous start, lost 2 wickets in the first over, but are staging a mini recovery. 71 for 2 now, after 17.1 overs. Difficult wicket at Old Trafford, and obviously there's a recovery job there. Kane Williamson, 34 not out. Ross Taylor, vastly experienced, 35 not out. So New Zealand, 72 for 2, trying to post a score to test the West Indians.
Roger Federer is on court over in a place which he should probably call home. He's won it 9 times over in Halle. It's been renamed, I think. It's got a new title sponsor on it, but he is in action, and Lomas is across it.
Yeah, the Roger Federer Open in Halle is well underway. Federer is 3 love up already in the first set, a break in his pocket, and he just had a break point that Pierre-Hugues Hubert has saved. And then over at Queens, we've got Dmitry Medvedev, won the first set 7-6 against Gilles Simon, 4-all in the second set there. The second semi-final coming up a little bit later on.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one. I say we'll keep an eye on it. We'll be watching it after we clock off. Looking forward to seeing Feliciano Lopez, who is partnering, of course, Andy Murray in his return to first-class action. Andy Murray after that hip surgery. Super Rugby quarterfinals done and dusted. We know who are into the semi-finals. Those matches are actually next week, semi-finals?
Yeah, both semi-finals in the Super Rugby is next weekend. All the quarterfinals finished, wrapped up early today. The Brumbies beat the Sharks in Canberra. They will play the Argentinian side, the Jaguares, who defeated the Chiefs. Crusaders yesterday had a big win, so they play their home semi-final against the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes earlier today defeated the Bulls.
Give you a quick update as well of what's going on in Formula One. It's Q3 over in France. Of course, the Formula One road show, the bandwagon, rolling back into Europe ahead of their summer break at the back end of this summer. No surprise when I tell you that the top two, Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas, both Mercedes, one and two. Then comes Charles Leclerc, who, as things stand, outgunning his teammate Sebastian Vettel once again. I tell you what, I think Sebastian Vettel faces a real fight to stay in that car beyond this season. He really does. Charles Leclerc showing him up, certainly thus far today over in France. Max Verstappen fourth, and then it's Sainz Jr. rounding out the top five in the McLaren as well. Nice to see Lando Norris as well, the Brit young man who I spoke to over in Bahrain last year in Formula 2. He is sick for McLaren. He's got a big future ahead.
Yeah, he was fastest in first qualifying, first practice as well the other day. So McLaren's looking surprisingly all right here.
Yeah, McLaren,
in France.
Absolutely. They're enjoying themselves over in France. It's been a couple of years in the doldrums for McLaren. I'm just conscious of time. Before I let you go, Bojan, just for anyone listening again, I've got to extend you the same courtesy that I extended Kasim. In terms of people, anyone listening, summer months come in. A lot of people who are in a privileged position, a lot of people might return home to their homelands for the summer, get away from the heat. For parents and for kids that are going to be around here in the summer, ESM Football, you're going to be doing numerous camps?
We'll do camps starting in August. So July 30th, 31st, we'll start with the camps all the way to the start of a new season in September.
And anyone listening, anyone that thinks they want to check out more about ESM Football, or want to see what Bojan and the guys are up to, the best place where to do that?
They can go on esmacademies.ae and find ESM Football Academy in there and find all the information that they need to know.
You've been here a number of years. You're still enjoying it? You still love the day-to-day imparting your wisdom?
I do what I like, so it's not hard for me to go on the pitch, even though temperature outside is 45 to 50 degrees.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're a lucky man. You're working in football
a lot. A lot different than back home in Serbia. So.
I bet you. Talking of, just on Serbia, football team, happy where they're at? No Nemanja Vidic these days, of course, but you've got Matic, you've got Maksimovic as well. You've got some decent players.
Yeah, we just changed the manager. I mean, we don't have him still, but at least the previous one, it's gone. So I'm expecting better results in the future.
We won't talk about Germany winning 6-1 in the 21.
I think Serbia had a good win.
Yeah, that's it. That's Bojan done.
Serbia had a good win in the Euros 4-1 recently. So yeah, they're back in the qualifying zone again.
Yeah, we lost before that from Ukraine. Yeah. So really painful.
You've always got good players. You just need to get a manager.
Mentality. Same issue. Really, players are in top clubs, but still we can't find a manager who can put the team together for a country, for me, mad.
I honestly, when I think about international football, I don't envy anyone in international management. You get all these players flying from all over the world, you've got 5 days, you've got to set them up in a cohesive unit, and you've got to go and try and get results as if they are club sites and you're working with them day in and day out. It's a thankful task, a thankless task, I should say. Right, that is it for us this afternoon. Mark Archer, I'll say a big thank you to you. New Zealand going to do this?
It's going to be a good match. I think both matches are really well poised here. Low scoring matches, I find, in 50 over cricket are often some of the best and closest rather than scoring 350 plus. So New Zealand 74 for 2. They're batting first against the West Indies, and Afghanistan making steady progress, 18 without loss, chasing 225. We didn't talk NBA draft today.
No,
but
we didn't.
Zion Williamson, watch out for this guy next year NBA. Biggest talent in the generation, they say, since LeBron James.
He's straight out of high school?
No, 1 year at Duke. He's gone for the New Orleans Pelicans. Watch out for that name. He is going to be a global superstar.
Yeah, he certainly is. There's no doubt about that. Big thanks to Mark Archer. His other half is away for the week, so I know what he's up to this evening, and that is sitting on the couch watching all things cricket. Monty, big thanks to you, my man.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chris. Pleasure talking about the World Cup and the transfer market. Football.
Well, we've not really done the transfer market today. We'll maybe touch on that on off script in the week, because there is a lot of movers and shakers, I'm sure. We're still waiting for that huge deal just to start that domino effect. Bojan, big thank to you. ESM Football Academy, keep doing what
thanks
you're doing.
Thanks a lot for having me here.
It's it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. In Serbia, I promise you, man, like Scotland, they'll get it right one day.
Yeah, someday.
Just keep having hope.
Eventually.
Keep having hope. And finally, Mark Lomas, big thank you to you, my man.
Thank you very much indeed. Yeah,
you're on your travels next week?
Next week, yeah.
You're off for 2 months, you lucky so-and-so. We will be back next Saturday from 3 until 6. I think Tom Ucker is back. You're not. You're at the cricket, Mark Archer.
I'm at Lords, the home of cricket, watching New Zealand defeat Australia.
Some people have all the luck. That is it for us this evening. I am back on your airways from 5, Robbie Greenfield, and myself, no Sonal Rupani, off script back, 5pm tomorrow. Of course, the Business Breakfast team will be back tomorrow from 6am. From all of us on Dubai 103.8, have a lovely Saturday evening, and we'll look forward to your company again tomorrow. Good night.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.